George works, I said. He helps Mom with money. Doesn't that make him different?
No. He's still a bum. He didn't have to quit school. We could have stayed in the Bronx. Things would have worked out. And maybe better, too.
But nobody knew it wouldn't work out too well, did they?
I asked. I don't want to talk about it anymore, he said. Again we rode in silence. I leaned my head into Doggy and closed my eyes. Education is the most important thing you can have, he said. I sat up. If you have that, it's yours. Nobody can take it away. You can make a place for yourself and nobody can hurt you. I looked up at him. He was staring straight ahead. He was talking to himself. I put my head back down on Doggy and closed my eyes. We came out of the subway at Elmhurst Avenue. I remembered seeing or hearing that name somewhere, but I couldn't remember where it was.
Where are we? I asked.
Oh, he laughed and tapped his hand against his forehead. I forgot to tell you. We moved.
Moved? Where?
Here. Elmhurst.
Elmhurst. Is that near St. Michael's?
No, I'm afraid not. I registered you into St. Bartholomew's.
Where?
St. Bartholomew's. It's just a few blocks from here. You'll like it.
I liked St. Michael's.
Well, it's too far.
Gosh, I liked St. Michael's, I pouted.
Right here, he said. He was pointing the way into a huge apartment building.
Here?
Apartment 5G. It's on the fifth floor. The building was beautiful. Fancy gold lettering above the door read, Wingate Apartments. He used a key to open the lobby door. He walked to the right, and I followed. He climbed a few steps and stopped.
What are we standing here for?
I asked. We're waiting for the elevator.
Elevator? Like the one in Macy's?
Well, it's not as big as the one in Macy's.
Can I tell the man the floor?
There is no man. It's automatic.
What's automatic?
You just push a button and it goes by itself.
Without a man?
Right.
How does it know where to go?
It's automatic.
Oh, gosh, I said. We're back to that again. Can I push the button?
The elevator door opened and we stepped in. Push 5, he said. I was amazed at the elevator going all by itself. It stopped at the fifth floor. We got out. The apartment was very big. There wasn't much furniture, so maybe it just seemed big. Off the front hall were a kitchen and a living room. There was nothing in the room but a couch and a television. They looked lost. We walked down a long hall to a back bedroom. We passed the bathroom, a closet, and another bedroom.
Is Mom in there?
I asked.
Yes,
he whispered. We went into the back bedroom. It looked like a dormitory. There were two single beds, a double-deck bunk bed, and an army cot.
Who sleeps there?
I asked. I pointed to the army cot.
You do.
Oh, great, I said. You won't think it's so great when you try it, he said. And don't... I plopped down on the cot and it collapsed. Plop down on it, he tailed off. We laughed. He helped me put it back together.
When can I see Mom?
When she wakes up. Now, let me give you some of the rules. He told me a nurse would be in 3 times a week to bathe Mom. I had to make sure I was home to let her in. I was never to touch the bed, never to tell Mom bad things or complain to her, and I was never to turn off the light. Do you understand? He asked.
Why can't I turn off the light?
I asked.
Because she's afraid of the dark.
I took Doggy from the bag and placed him on the cot.
Where is everybody, Walter?
Well, Jean is still away. I'll get him on Friday. George is working and Larry's out. I have to study now, so be quiet. I wanted to ask him about Sal, but again, I was afraid of the answer. I cautiously sat down on the cot and lifted Doggy.
Hi, fella,
I whispered.
We got a whole bunch of new stuff to get used to.
Stop whispering, Walter snapped.
Walter,
Mom called out. Her voice was low, sort of muffled. Walter jumped to his feet. I stood up.
Can I come?
No, stay here. I sat back down and hugged Doggy.
I hope I can see Mom soon, I said.
Jennings, Mom called. I looked around the corner of the door to see if it was all right to see her. Walter motioned for me to come in. Mom was all covered up except for her head. Walter was right when he described how she looked. She looked awful. The tears welled up in my eyes as I got near her. She was staring at the ceiling.
Jennings,
she called again. The brace around her chin prevented her from opening her mouth all the way. That's why her voice sounded muffled.
I'm right here,
I said.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't see you,
she said.
I can't turn my head. I'll come closer, all right?
Don't touch the bed, Walter said. I got as close as I could.
That's better, she said. How are you, dear?
I couldn't talk. The tears would fall if I did, and I didn't want to break the rule about upsetting her.
Don't cry, dear, she said. I know I look terrible, but I'll be all right. I'm not crying,
I said as I backed out of range and wiped my eyes with Doggy. I stepped back to her.
Are you going to be my little helper?
She asked.
Yes,
I said.
That's good. I'm going to need someone I can depend on. Walter can teach you how to feed me. Do you mind helping me? Of course not. I'll help you.
She closed her eyes. The room was silent. I didn't know if she fell asleep or what. I started to back away.
Are you still there?
She asked.
Yes.
I stepped forward.
I'm still here. Please be a good boy. Don't drink like George or run away from me like Larry did.
She started to cry.
I won't,
I said. Walter tugged at my shoulder. He pointed toward the door. He wanted me to leave. I went back into the bedroom and sat down. Walter came in right after me.
I didn't mean to make her cry.
You didn't, he said. She gets that way sometimes. She just starts crying. I lay back on the cot and closed my eyes. I was awakened by Walter. Do you want some soup? He asked.
Okay,
I said. I sat up and stretched. Walter had the soup already in the bowl when I got to the kitchen. I no sooner sat down than I heard the front door slam.
Who's that?
I said. George or Larry, I guess. It was both of them. Larry zipped past the kitchen door and went right on down the hall. George stuck his head in the door. Hi, he said.
Hi. How are you?
I replied. Fine, fine. He was a little glassy-eyed.
Where's Larry going?
I asked. He's a little under the weather, he said. Well, I'll see you later. I'm going to watch a little of Uncle Milty.
Who?
Milton Berle. The Texaco Star Theater. Come and watch with me. He left the doorway. Well, what do you think of Larry now? Walter asked.
How can I think anything? I didn't see him.
Well, he's drunk.
Is that what under the weather means?
He nodded his head. We finished the soup in silence, except for the tinkling of the spoons against the bowls. I was sorry to see Larry under the weather. I was looking forward to seeing him again. I finished eating and joined George in the living room. The ventriloquist is Jimmy Nelson, George said, and his dummy is Danny O'Day. He was explaining who I was watching.
Oh, I thought you were watching something about an uncle.
I am. Uncle Milty. That's Milton Berle's nickname. This is his show.
Oh, I get it now.
During the commercial, George went into the kitchen for a beer. You want anything, Mike? He called from the kitchen.
No, thank you,
I said. George was the only one who called me Mike. Everyone knew I had changed my name at St. Michael's, but nobody called me anything other than Jennings. George returned with his beer and lit a cigarette. It's not my fault, he said.
What?
That Mom fell down the stairs and got hurt, he said. It's not my fault.
I didn't think it was your fault,
I said.
I was mad when it first happened, but I got over that.
Were you mad at me?
Sure.
Why? I didn't push her down the stairs.
No. But she asked you to fix the antenna. What difference does it make now? I said. I'm not mad no more.
It makes a big difference, he said. I want you to know it wasn't my fault.
I know it wasn't. It was just an accident, that's all.
Okay, he said. How was the home? Rough?
Yeah, pretty rough.
I want you to know, I tried to get you almost as soon as you got there.
Did you?
They wouldn't let me take care of you. They said 17 wasn't old enough. I had to be 21.
21? Egads, nobody's 21, except Mom and... Nobody's 21.
Well, let's just hope there's no more homes, he said. I nodded my head in agreement.
How's Larry? When did he get home?
He's all right. He just drank a little too much, that's all. As far as when he got home, let me think. I'd say about a month or so ago.
Walter's real upset that he's drinking.
What's a few beers? That's not drinking. Walter's a pain in the ass.
Walter thinks he's going to end up like...
Uh-oh, I said to myself. Now I did it. Like who? Me? Son of a bitch. I break my ass to hold things together, and what do I get for it? He shook his head and dashed out his cigarette. Doesn't anybody see anything but my drinking? Maybe I should be like Larry and run out when things get tough. Or like Walter, just take and keep on taking. Make a place for myself and screw everyone else. It ain't fair, he said. I'm tired of it. He got up and left the room. I sat by myself for a few minutes. I turned off the television and went into the bedroom. George was sitting on his bed. Larry was lying across his bed, fully clothed and snoring. Walter was reading at the desk. I sat on George's bed.
I see other things, I said. You once brought me Doggy when I needed him. You tried to get me out of this home, and you're the only one who calls me Mike.
Thanks, he said, and scratched the top of my head. I'm just blowing off steam. Don't pay no attention to me. I went over to my cot and lay down. I hugged Doggy and fell asleep. Sometime during my dreams, I felt someone taking my clothes off. I was much too sleepy to help them. They covered me up and replaced Doggy in my arms. Good night, Mike, George whispered. Walter woke me up in the morning. I dressed and watched him feed Mom. Part of the morning, for about half an hour, I rode up and down the elevator. It was fun. I stopped on all the floors. I returned to the lobby for about the fifth time when Larry got on.
Jennings, what are you doing here?
I live here, I said.
I know that, he laughed. I meant, when did you get home?
He got into the elevator and pressed the button.
Yesterday afternoon.
You got home yesterday? I didn't see you.
I saw you. You were drunk.
He laughed.
I had a couple. I wasn't drunk.
Larry, what are you doing?
What do you mean, what am I doing?
I don't know. I just remember you complaining about George's drinking, that's all.
Well, I changed my mind.
You changed more than that, I mumbled.
The elevator stopped at the fifth floor and we got off.
You haven't seen me in a year, and all you got to talk about is how much I drank last night. Don't ask me how I am or where I've been.
I was getting to that.
Well, don't bother, he snapped.
He pushed open the apartment door, then slammed it in my face. Larry wouldn't talk to me for the rest of the day. I guess I couldn't blame him. I should have asked him how and where he was, and then asked about his drinking. This way, I would have known how and where he was before he stopped talking to me. I fed Mom some soup and some tea. To feed her, I just put whatever she was eating in a glass and then held it up to her cheek. She did the rest by sipping it down through a funny-looking crooked straw. I asked her if I could use one of her straws to drink chocolate milk or something, but she said no. She was afraid I might break it. After she finished eating, I started to read a comic book to her and Doggy. I didn't get to the end of the first story before she fell asleep. I kissed her hand as lightly as I could before I closed the door. I made sure not to turn her light off. After supper, Doggy and I watched Captain Video, and the name's the same. Larry had gone out, so we were alone. Doggy said he was tired.
I am too, I said,
and staggered down the hall toward the bedroom and fell onto my cot, carefully, so it wouldn't collapse. The next morning, I went down the hall to the kitchen. As I turned at the doorway, there was Sal, sitting at the table, reading the paper.
Sal!
I cried. I flew into his arms. I knocked his paper to the floor.
Hey, take it easy, take it easy,
he laughed. He kissed the top of my head as I hugged him. Suddenly, I jumped back from him.
Why didn't you come for me? Didn't you get my note?
I got your note, but I couldn't come for you.
Aren't you over 21?
I asked. He laughed. Sure I am. But there's more to it than that.
What?
I wasn't ready to make a commitment to you.
What's that?
I wasn't ready to take care of you on a full-time basis.
Don't you care about me?
I asked.
Sure I care about you.
But there are other ways to show someone you care.
Like what?
Like not lying to them, for one thing. I couldn't come for you and say I'll take care of you and then just leave you someplace, could I? I pouted a little before answering him.
I just missed you. I've been gone 7 months, I said. I missed you a lot.
I missed you too, son. He hugged me. He held me in his huge arms.
Son, isn't it better to know I won't lie to you? Isn't it better to know when I come for you, it'll be for keeps?
I had to think about that for a moment.
I guess so, I mumbled. But sometimes lying's better. It makes me feel good.
But only for a little while. When the lie has to stand up as the truth and it doesn't, it hurts twice as much. He raised his eyebrows as if to ask me, what do you think?
I guess so, I mumbled.
Sal tickled me to make me laugh, then held me.
How was it, son?
I told him. I told him about Mark. He was pleased I had remembered what he had told me about midnight. I didn't tell him I felt bad about not telling Mark I loved him, because I loved Sal, too. I figured nobody went around saying those things. I told Sal I thought a lot about Jerome.
Do you think we might arrange to visit him again?
He laughed. I think I can manage that, he said. But it'll have to wait until I get back.
Get back? Back from where?
I have to go on the road tonight.
Oh, gosh. For how long?
A few weeks. I'll try to arrange it when I get back, all right?
All right.
I gave Sal a hug, and he left. I fed Mom some soup.
Want me to read to you?
I asked.
That would be nice, dear.
I got my baseball cards and read the backs of them to her. When I got to Yogi Berra's card, I said,
oops. Well, what is it, dear?
I told her about the deal Jerome and I made about Yogi winning the MVP. Then I had to explain to her what MVP meant.
You have to get out more, Mom,
I said. She laughed.
Don't make me laugh, dear. It hurts. I'm sorry. I think I want to sleep now, she said.
In the weeks that followed, one day ran into the next. I fed and took care of Mom. I talked to her when I could, but it was hard. She would either cry or fall asleep. No one was ever around, so I was very lonely. Jean had made some friends in the building, so I only saw him at supper time. We would fight over television, but then he would fall asleep. Then I'd watch what I wanted. One afternoon, I found Larry packing a suitcase.
Where are you going?
I asked.
Away. Away where?
Just anywhere, he said. He picked up his comic books and then threw them on the floor.
You can have them if you want them.
I didn't say anything. I just sat on my bed and watched. I thought about the first time he had run away and how I felt. It's different now. He was different. The Larry who ran away a long time ago never came back.
You ought to run too, he said.
Oh yeah? Why?
You're just the damn slave around here, he said. I'd be a slave too, but I'm too smart for them. You're stupid.
Why am I stupid? Because I take care of Mom, I'm stupid?
That's right.
Well, if I don't do it, who will? You?
Not me, buddy.
I'm not your buddy.
Look, don't give me any of your crap. If you don't want to run, don't.
I don't.
But don't give me any of your crap. I ain't nothing around here, so I'm going. I'm going to where I can be somebody.
What are you talking about? I'll tell you what I'm talking about.
George is the breadwinner. Walter's the brains. You're the goody two-shoes until they don't need you no more. Then you're out. And Jean's the baby. Where does that leave me?
I don't know. Where?
Nowhere. I don't belong here.
He slammed down the suitcase lid and stormed out of the room. I sat by the window and looked down on Elmhurst Avenue. I saw Larry come out of the building lugging his suitcase. I hope he finds what he's looking for. I wished he could have found it here. I wished he never would have started drinking. I laid my head across my arms and cried. I was mixed up. I wanted to be angry with Larry because he had changed so much. But I wasn't. I was sad for him. Under all his growling and complaining, he was as lonesome as I was. He was looking for some place to belong. I could understand that.
Goodbye, Larry,
I whispered. I didn't tell Mom Larry had gone. She asked for him a couple of times, but I said he was out looking for work. I didn't tell Walter until maybe a week or so later.
So what?
Was all he had to say. My 11th birthday came and went without notice. I didn't tell Mom it was my birthday because she would just start crying. I didn't want that. Sal finally returned. I told him about Larry.
That's too bad, he said. He's getting used to running away, and that's no good.
What do you mean he's getting used to running away?
When someone runs from something once, he said, that's one thing. But when they continue to run, it becomes a habit. They learn to run all the time instead of facing things. That's bad.
I told him not to tell Mom about Larry. He understood. He talked to Mom. He told her he was looking for a new job.
I'd like to be around here more, he said.
I'd like that too, she said.
I think Jennings and Jean need someone around. Besides, he said, I'm getting tired of this job. I'd like to get something with less hours on the road. Maybe then I could stay in the living room.
That would be nice, she said.
I'll have to ask the boys, he said.
I don't mind,
I said, smiling.
I know you don't mind. It's George and Walter I'm talking about.
Oh, them,
I mumbled.
Yes, them, he laughed.
I'll ask them when it gets a little closer. When will that be?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the late fall.
The fall? That's years away, I said.
No, it's not. It only seems that way.
Sal went back on the road the following day. I missed him. Fall was years away, and I knew it. I also knew George wouldn't like Sal staying in the living room. Walter might think it was all right as long as he could drive the car, but George? Uh-uh. I was home one afternoon, sitting by the bedroom window. Mom was asleep, and I was alone. I saw what I thought was Sal's car pull up. I watched. Sal got out.
Oh, doggy, look, it's Sal!
He was excited. I held him up to see better. We watched Sal go around his car and open the other door. Jerome got out.
Jerome!
I cried. I ran from the window and out of the room. I ran down the hallway and out of the apartment. I pressed and pressed for the elevator to come, but it wouldn't. I ran down the stairs. I almost fell over my own feet. I was just coming out of the stairwell when Jerome came down the hall.
Jerome!
I yelled. We threw our arms around each other.
What are you doing here?
I asked. They let me come home.
For how long?
He shrugged his shoulders.
I don't know. For keeps, maybe.
Jerome was put to bed immediately. The apartment was like a little hospital. Mom in one room and Jerome in the other. But at least now I had someone to talk to. I was glad to be with Jerome again. I'd missed him. We talked about all sorts of things. Stamps, models, baseball, and chess.
You're getting really good, he said. I had a good teacher. Mark.
Mark? Who's Mark?
He was a boy I knew at the home, I said quietly.
You talk as if he were dead.
He is.
Oh. Well, we all have to go sometime.
He spoke so matter-of-factly, I was startled.
Doesn't it bother you? I asked.
What? Death?
Yeah.
No. When you've lived your whole life in one hospital or another, you get used to things like that.
Oh, wow, I said.
Are you afraid of death? He asked.
I never thought about it, really. Not until Mark died. Now I think about it sometimes.
It's nothing, he said. For people like me, it's only the end of sickness and pain, that's all.
And for people like me?
He laughed. People like you are better off not thinking about it at all. You get along better that way.
He pushed his glasses back on his nose. Jerome reminded me so much of Mark. If they had met, I thought, I'm sure they would have liked each other. We talked about the family. We talked about Larry running away. He agreed with Sal. Running can become a habit, he said. We talked about George wanting to be thanked for carrying the load by himself.
I don't think he wants to be thanked as much as he wants to be recognized, he said.
What?
He wants Mom and Walter to see he's doing good and appreciate him, he said. When all they see is his drinking, he drinks more.
How do you know all this stuff? I asked.
He laughed.
I pay attention, he said. And I ask questions. Asking questions is how you learn. And learning is how you grow.
Will I grow if I ask questions?
Sure.
Then will you tell me what it means to have a brother and to be one? I've been thinking about this for a long time.
Sure, he said.
Well?
Well, what?
Aren't you going to tell me?
Sure I am.
When?
In time, he said. In time, Jennings, you'll tell me.
I was afraid of that, I mumbled.
Now, he said, tell me what Walter thinks about all this stuff going on.
I told him Walter thought education was the only thing that was important, the only thing you could count on. I told him Walter thought George and Larry were nothing but bums.
That's too bad, he said. Walter sees everything as black and white.
What do you mean?
Walter only sees things from his point of view. He doesn't see George and Larry have created a whole different set of problems for themselves. Walter can only spell compassion.
I scratched my head.
Jerome laughed. You see, it's like this. Walter, with all his intelligence, doesn't realize all of you have the same problem. You're all trying to belong. You're all trying to survive. He's found one way, and it's a good one. George and Larry found another, and it's bad. Someday maybe Walter will see how lucky he is. He could have just as easily gone a different way. Their way.
Someday I'm going to learn how to talk to adults, I said.
He laughed. It's not all that difficult, he said. All you have to do is say what you feel and learn to listen. It's called being open. There's two sides to everything.
I'm glad I asked. Want to play checkers?
He laughed. After school each day, I was anxious to get home and be with Jerome. He was my only friend, outside of Doggy, of course.
Don't you ever go out anywhere? He asked.
No.
Why not?
Well, I just take care of Mom and you. That's all. I used to go to the park across Broadway when the nurse came, I said. She didn't want me around when she bathed Mom.
I made a face.
Well, why don't you go to the park now?
Now?
But I want to stay with you.
I want you to go to the park.
You can't just keep staying indoors all the time. I stay in because I have to. But you don't have to.
But no buts. Go. I went to the park. I sat on the bench and waited. I figured I'd wait a little while and then go back.
I watched the kids playing on the swings and the slide. My eye caught sight of a blonde-headed girl on the far side of the park coming toward me. I watched her. She came closer and closer. Her eyes caught mine. She stopped in her tracks and stared. I looked behind me to see who she was staring at. There was no one there. I turned back. Suddenly, she started running toward me. I got nervous.
"Jennings!"
she shouted. It wasn't until she got very close to me that I realized who it was. It was Stacy.
"Stacy,"
I said. Chills ran over my arms and legs.
"Stacy."
I started to stand as she reached me. She nearly tackled me back down onto the bench. She kissed me.
"What are you doing here?"
I said.
"I live here. I've been away at school, but I'm back now. What are you doing here?"
"I live here too."
"Where?"
"Right there."
I pointed up Elmhurst Avenue.
"So that's where I heard the name."
"What?"
"The name Elmhurst. When I first got here, I was sure I had heard of Elmhurst, but I couldn't remember where I heard it. You told me Elmhurst back at the home."
"Oh, wow," she said. "I can't believe I'm seeing you. So tell me."
She grabbed hold of my arm and wrapped both her arms around it.
"Where have you been?"
I felt the redness rise in my face and the back of my neck.
"Everywhere," I said.
She asked me a million questions. She hadn't changed at all. Well, at least not in how fast she could talk. She had changed in appearance a little. She was taller and prettier. She was wearing a light blue dress with white lace around her collar and sleeves. Her hair was still golden yellow and shone in the sunlight. She was becoming a real young lady. She smelled wonderful.
"You know, I loved you when we were kids," she said.
I turned a bright red. The heat rushed into my face.
"Oh, gosh," I said.
She laughed.
"You still say, oh, gosh."
She leaned forward and kissed my cheek.
"You know, I still love you,"
she said.
"Oh, gosh,"
I mumbled. She started to laugh again. She tucked herself close into me.
"I wasn't glad when I first got home," she said. "I wanted to stay at school for the summer, but now I'm glad." "Oh, gosh."
Stacy and I walked to the edge of the park. She held my hand. Her hand was soft and warm. I hadn't realized how soft someone's hand could be.
"Will I see you here tomorrow?"
she asked.
Yes, I said. "I'll be here tomorrow."
She leaned toward me and kissed me. She no longer kissed me on the cheek, but on the mouth. I was frozen where I stood. I watched her walk up the street. She turned back and smiled. I didn't see Stacy as forward anymore. I saw her as open. She was what Jerome was talking about. You didn't have to guess what Stacy was thinking or feeling. She told you. I walked up the hill toward home. I was rushed with new feelings. When I got into the bedroom, I sat on my bed. "What's wrong with you?" Jerome asked. "Fresh air too much for you?" Well, that's a good start. What else?" he laughed.
You
said that," he laughed again. "Want to play cards?"
"Yeah."
I got up and went over to him. I sat on the cards. "What's the matter with you?" he asked. "Are you in love or something?"
"What? No," I said. "I'm not in love. I'm not in love."
He really started laughing.
"I think you're in love," he said.
"Really?"
"Could be. I looked like that when I was 11 and in love," he said. "Who is she?"
Stacy,
I mumbled.
"Stacy, that's a pretty name. Tell me about her."
I told him. I told him about when I first met her, about the home, everything.
"I think you're in love."
"How do you know?"
I asked.
"You just know,"
he said. "You get all these tingly feelings. It's puppy love."
"Puppy love?"
"Yeah," he smiled.
"Like two little puppies having a wonderful time playing together. Enjoy it." "I've never been in love before. I'm a little afraid of it, I think."
"What?"
"I think I'm afraid of love."
"How can you be afraid of love? Love is the nicest thing in the world."
"Yeah, but
If it's the nicest thing, how come nobody talks about it or says anything about it?
We're talking about it, aren't we?
That's true.
Well, I started to tell Jerome what I thought and felt about love, how I wished I had told Mark what I felt about him, and about Sal.
Mark and I pretended we were brothers, I said.
Is that why you asked me about brothers? I nodded my head yes.
Well, he sighed, I still think you'll work out what it means to have and be a brother all by yourself. But as far as love is concerned, I think people are just afraid of the words. Take Mom, for instance. Mom?
Yeah, Mom never says it, but she feels it.
How do you know?
Well, she could have put everyone in a home and not come back at all, but she didn't. As hard a time as Mom was having, she kept trying. She kept trying to keep us all together. Sure, everything's a mess, but she tried. That's love.
Why don't you think she says it?
It's the words, he said. So many people think their love won't be accepted or returned, so they don't say it. They think by not saying it, they won't be hurt. They're wrong.
They're wrong?
Sure they are. By not saying it, they build a little wall around themselves. They lock all that love up inside. That hurts more than rejection.
I want to say it sometimes, I said, but it don't come out. I want to tell Mom and Sal, but it just don't come out.
Well, when you want to say it, you should just say it. Let it come out.
Gosh, I don't know if I can, I said. I always thought nobody wanted to hear that stuff. Now I gotta think about saying it.
Say it, he said. If everyone went around thinking nobody wanted to hear it, I love you wouldn't exist. I sat on the park bench and looked around. I didn't see Stacy anywhere. I waited. I ran my fingernail along a crack in the bench and waited. Suddenly, two hands were clasped over my eyes. Both my hands went up to hold hers.
Guess who?
Stacy said. Her voice was soft and sweet. I hadn't realized how nice her voice was. My fingers ran over her hands and her fingers. She felt warm.
Stacy, I said. You win.
She leaned over the top of me and kissed my cheek. She slipped her arms around my shoulders and pulled me close to her, my head pressed against her chest.
You win me,
she said. We walked around the outside of the park. I held her hand. We talked about all sorts of things. I told her about Mark. She remembered him. She stopped walking and cried. I held her around her waist as she leaned into me. She put her head against my shoulder and her arms around my neck. I thought I should be bright red in the face, but I wasn't. I liked being near her. She was wearing a pink sweater to match her pink slacks. Her blouse was white and lacy. Her hair was pinned back over each ear. The words were stuck in my throat. I kissed her above her ear. I walked Stacy home after the park. She lived in a small private house on the street just behind the building I lived in.
Can you believe how close we are to each other?
I asked. She had her hands around my waist.
I can believe it, she said. No, I mean, that's my house, I said.
I pointed to it. She looked up at the huge building.
The whole thing?
She said.
No,
I laughed. Just one little apartment.
Want to go to the movies Saturday?
She asked.
All right,
I said.
All right, she said. I'll see you Saturday.
She leaned forward and kissed me. I kissed her back. I left Stacy and sort of floated down the street toward Broadway. My head was filled with new thoughts. I was filled with new feelings. I laughed a little when I thought of how I acted toward Stacy 3 years ago at the home. As I walked along, I had the strangest feeling I could hear music. That's really weird. I was sure only people in the movies heard music when they were in love. I was right. I passed a little wooden shack by a building under construction. I heard the music coming from inside. I stopped near the door. Someone was playing the harmonica. I listened. Why don't you come in? A voice said as the music stopped. I hesitated for a moment, but then pushed the door open. Hi, young fella, the man said. He
He was an elderly black man with white curly hair. He was sitting by a small potbelly stove. He was wearing a dark brown sweater pulled over a plaid shirt. He had a big hole at his elbow. He needed a shave.
"Sit yourself down," he said. "Takes the chill from your bones."
"It's not cold," I said.
"Well, it's cold for me," he laughed. "What you calls yourself?"
His laugh was raspy and deep.
"I calls myself, I mean, my name is Jennings."
"It's a pleasure to meet you," he said.
He put his hand out.
"They calls me Clarence."
"How did you know I was outside the door, Clarence?"
I asked as I shook his hand. He chuckled.
"Instinct, me boy, instinct."
I scratched my head. I didn't think I smelled bad, but I guess if he could smell me through the door, I must. I'll have to take a shower, I thought. Clarence played his harmonica for me. He closed his eyes when he played. He swayed back and forth with the music. Clarence was drifting off somewhere. He played beautifully.
"Does anybody live here with you?"
I asked.
Clarence laughed. "I don't lives here. I works here. I'm the night watchman."
"What do you watch?"
"I just see that nobody fools with the building till morning. That's all."
"Oh, so you just sit here all night and play your harmonica?"
"That's all."
He grinned.
"Play me harp and make me friends."
"Do you make a lot of friends?"
"Millions of them. Millions."
He smiled. He had as many teeth as he had friends.
"Millions? How do you have room for millions of friends?"
He laughed.
"That's easy," he said. "I only needs enough room for the friend I'm with. When they go, I got's room for another."
He started to play another song. In the middle of his playing, he stopped.
"Don't ever worry about having too many friends, son," he said. "Just enjoy who you is with."
"There's a girl I like to be with. Her name is Stacy."
"Stacy? Why, that's a beautiful name. I'll bet she's a lovely girl."
"She is."
"And is she your first love?" he asked.
"I think so. It's puppy love."
"Puppy love,"
he laughed, showing all his teeth.
"Well, ain't that something? Why, I remember when I was about your age."
He closed his eyes and dreamed.
"I was in love with a little girl named Melissa."
He made sort of a humming sound.
"What happened to her?"
"We grews up," he said. "She went her way, and I went mine. I always think of her, though. She was my first love, and that's very special."
He started to play his harp again. He stopped.
"If Inyo and Stacy should ever drifts apart," he said, "don't ever forget her. She will always be the one who started your heart to beating. That's important."
He smiled. He started to play. He winked at me as I made my way out the door. It was getting late, and I had to get home. I got to see Stacy nearly every day. I had to take care of Mom and Jerome first, but after that I got to see her. We went for walks, and once in a while to the movies. It was nice just being with her. Stacy showed me things I hadn't seen before. Things I knew were always there, but just never saw them, like flowers. She loved flowers and trees and birds. If I was with her in the evening, she would name some of the stars for me. I never knew stars had names. I thought they were all just stars. For that matter, I never knew grass had a special smell or leaves felt the way they did. I hadn't realized a sunset could be so much prettier when you watched it with someone else. I never knew rain was sometimes warm. Stacy had a way of making everything seem wonderful. If I could say I love you to anyone, I thought, it would be to Stacy. So many times I came close to finding the words, and just as many times I swallowed them. Someday I'll say it, I thought. I know I will. It was early in July when Stacy and I were out walking. We stopped to rest in a triangular-shaped park with benches and trees. It was a small park, so it didn't have any swings or anything. We sat on one of the benches.
"I have to go, Jennings," she said.
"Go? Go where?"
"Away. I have to go away with my parents and my sister."
"Oh, gosh.
I don't want you to go away. I don't either, she said. But I have to.
She leaned her head into my chest and started to cry. I brushed her hair back with my hand and kissed her forehead.
Don't cry,
I said.
I'll see you when you get back, won't I? I won't be back until September. Then I go away to school.
I flicked my thumbnail against my pointer finger. Love hurts, I thought. It's like friendship. Even if you don't say it, you feel it.
Can I write to you?
She asked.
Sure, I said. I never wrote to nobody, but I'll write to you. Then maybe we'll see each other next summer, she said.
I looked out over the park toward my school. The building was empty now, but in a couple of months I'd be back there. I'll be in the sixth grade. Next summer's a long time from now.
Jennings,
she said quietly.
Yeah? I won't see you next summer, will I? I don't know, I said. So many people I liked have come and gone in my life. I don't hold out much hope for next summer. It's too far away to plan. You still live by the rules of the home, don't you? I don't have no choice, Stacy,
I said. I looked into her eyes. The edges of her lids were lined with tears. So were mine.
I made the mistake once of forgetting it could all end tomorrow, and I paid for it. How?
It ended, and it hurt twice as much. We sat on the bench as a light rain started to fall. At first, we didn't move.
We're getting wet,
she said. We left the bench and dashed toward the school. We stood in the doorway.
When do you have to go?
I asked.
Tomorrow.
I brought her wet hand up to my lips and kissed her fingers. There wasn't anything left to say. Jerome had told me, when you feel it, say it. But I couldn't. The words just wouldn't come. They were there, but I couldn't get them out. The rain let up and we walked. I took her to her house.
I'll write to you,
she said. I nodded my head.
And if we see each other next summer, she said, that will be wonderful. And if we don't, I said, I'll know from how much I miss you just how special you are to me.
She kissed me, then ran into the house. The pins and needles faded after a few minutes, and I could walk. I passed Clarence's shack and heard the music. I leaned my head against the side of his door and cried. I went straight to bed when I got home. I took Doggy from under my pillow and hugged him.
You never let me down, do you, Doggy?
I whispered. I guess I moped around a bit for the first few days. Jerome didn't say anything to me. He sort of knew something was wrong, but he didn't say anything. When I was back to being myself a little, he talked to me. You've grown up a lot, he said. Love will sometimes do that to you, even more than questions.
Do you really think so?
I asked. I do, he said. I don't know what happened, but whatever it was, you seem to be taking it all right.
She went away.
He made a face like he was sorry. There'll be others, he said. Stacy is just the beginning.
Do you think I feel real love for her?
I asked.
Sure you do, don't you? How come it's different than what I feel for Mom or Sal or Doggy? I love them too.
He laughed. Love comes in all sizes and shapes. You'll see. Did you ever tell her you loved her? I shook my head no. Can't get it out yet, can you?
No.
You will, he said. And when you do, he paused. You'll know what it feels like to say it, and you'll never stop. It becomes a habit. Jerome didn't talk much after that day. He got sick a few days later. I called a number that was put by the phone in case of an emergency. His doctor came from Bellevue Hospital. She made arrangements for Jerome to go back.
I'm going to miss you, I said. Please come back soon.
I will, he mumbled. I promise. I laid my head by his arm as the men prepared to take him. Promise me something, he said.
Yes, what?
Promise me you won't stop asking questions.
I won't stop.
Good. And if it all goes wrong for you, don't give up.
Hang in there.
He closed his eyes.
Jerome?
I whispered.
Yes.
To feel what I feel for you is to have a brother, and to be able to tell you about it is to be one.
Simple, isn't it?
He smiled. The man lifted him onto a stretcher and took him. I lay in bed with Doggy. I cried out all the tears I had. There were none left. I was tired. I had given Mom her medicine and she was trying to sleep. Walter and Jean were watching television. George was out.
Mom is taking it badly, Doggy,
I said.
I never saw her cry so much.
I heard Walter go into Mom's room.
Jerome is gonna die, she screamed. I just have to lie here and take it.
I heard a crash. I leapt from the bed and ran into Mom's room. She had cut the weight, letting it fall to the floor.
Oh, gosh.
Grab that rope, Walter said. He tried to retie the weight. Mom was screaming. Chills were running all over me. I was scared.
Give her another pill, Walter said.
Do you think I should? I said. I gave her three already.
Three, he snapped. I gave her two.
I gave her four,
Jean said.
Did you?
Walter asked. Jean nodded his head.
Oh, my God,
he cried. He ran from the room, dropping the weight back to the floor. He called the police.
Keep her awake, he said. The police are on the way.
Will she die?
Jean asked.
God, I hope not,
Walter said. He ran from the room.
Keep her talking, he yelled.
Mom, talk to me,
I said.
Yes, dear. Is Jerome dead?
She asked.
No, Mom, he's not gonna die. He promised.
I know. I promised things, too. And I couldn't keep them,
she cried.
It's all right, I said. You tried.
No one thinks I tried. They all blame me for what's happened. I tried to make a good home, but I couldn't do it alone. I just couldn't do it.
What's she talking about?
Jean asked.
Nothing. Go see if Walter needs you.
Walter needs me?
Mom said.
Walter doesn't need me. Walter doesn't need anyone. George only needs drink and Larry.
She cried.
Oh, Larry! Why did you go away again?
He didn't go anywhere. He's at work.
No, he's gone. I know he's gone. You're all gone. I'm alone. I can't do it alone.
I couldn't help finding more tears. I talked and cried at the same time.
You'll be all right, Mom. You'll see. You won't have to do it alone. I'll help you. It's too late, she said. I tried to keep everyone together. I didn't want my children to grow up hating each other, but now they do. I lost them.
The policeman pushed me aside. Outside, son, one of them ordered. I backed out through the door. Two ambulance men came rushing down the hall. Walter pulled me close to him and folded his arms around me. He had Jean holding onto one of his pants legs. They wheeled Mom past us.
Is she dead?
Jean asked. No, a policeman said. She'll be all right. He called Walter over to one side to talk to him. He kept looking over his shoulder at Jean and me. I knew what was coming. I went into the bedroom to be with Doggy.
I can't take much more of this, Doggy,
I cried into him. I hid my head under the pillow. Walter nudged me.
Jennings, he said softly.
Go away.
I can't, he said. You have to go.
I don't want to,
I screamed. I brought my head from beneath the pillow.
I don't want to.
Walter sat on the bed and held me.
I'll come for you just as soon as they let me, he said.
I got to my feet and went to the closet. I took my laundry bag out. I started to stuff some things into it. Walter left the room. He knew there wasn't anything else to say. I kissed Doggy and put him in on top of my clothes. I took a piece of paper from Walter's desk. I wrote Sal a note.
Dear Sal, please come for me and Doggy. We need you. Your son, Jennings Birch.
I crumpled up the paper and threw it in Walter's waste paper basket.
Come on, Doggy,
I said, as I lifted my laundry bag. Chapter 14. We sat in the dark shadows on a wooden bench in the precinct station house. Jean was half asleep, lying up against my side. His feet were pulled up. I'm glad now that Stacy went away. It would be awful for her to be waiting somewhere for me to show up, and I didn't. She'd understand, I know, but it would hurt.
Jean Birch,
the policeman behind the desk called out. There was a lady standing in front of the high wooden desk. She was here to take Jean. Come on, I said. I got Jean to his feet.
Where are we going?
He asked. You have to go with that lady. We started to approach her.
I don't want to go with her. I want to stay with you.
Can we stay together? I asked anyone who would answer me.
I'm afraid not, the lady said.
We only have room for him at the moment.
You can go back and sit down, the policeman told me.
I want to say goodbye first.
I ain't going!
Jean yelled. The lady took his hand.
I ain't going!
I crouched down to talk to him.
Look, it won't be for long, I said.
I didn't believe myself.
I'll see you real soon.
I kissed his cheek. His tears were salty. He was crying too hard to form the word goodbye. He went with the lady. I watched through the blur of my tears as he left. He kept looking back at me to stop her, but I couldn't. There wasn't anything I could do. I sat back down and took Doggy from the bag. I curled up, facing the back of the bench. I drifted off, thinking about Mom and Jerome. I wonder if Jerome had known things would get worse. He had told me not to give up. That's easy, I laughed to myself, to say I won't before it happens. I was awakened by a policeman. There's a lady here from child welfare, he said. I sat up and cleared my eyes. I swung my feet to the floor and lifted Doggy. I put him in the bag. The lady took me out to a car. She didn't ask me my name or anything. I guess she already knew everything she wanted to know. After an hour or so of riding in silence, we stopped in front of an old red brick building. There was some ivy growing up one side near the door.
Are we in Brooklyn?
I asked.
No, Yonkers, she said. Let's go.
She was cold and abrupt. I knew she wasn't going to say, have a good time, when she left. She pushed open the front door. The hall was dark, but she knew exactly where she was going. She brought me through the darkness to an office. She switched on a light.
Sit there,
she said. She dropped a folder she had tucked under her arm on the desk. She left. I sat on a rickety old chair and waited. The room was painted the same light and dark green. Who paints all these places, I wondered. They must have millions of gallons of green paint. A lady in a dark blue dress pushed open the door.
Oh,
she was startled.
I didn't know anyone was here, she said. I'm here.
Well, she said as she stepped behind the desk and picked up the folder,
let's see who you are.
I could have told her who I was. But by the way she spoke, she didn't seem to want to know who I was from me.
Birch Jennings, she said. Birch surely is a strange first name. What kind of name is that?
It's my last name, I said. I smiled weakly.
Oh, well, let's get you settled, Jennings.
She put out her hand for me to take. I got up and took her hand. She brought me through the same darkness to a dormitory. She brought me to a bed and left me. It was too dark to see my number, so I didn't know who I was. One number is as good as another, I thought. I'll find out tomorrow who I am. I felt around the side of the bed and found a cabinet. I opened it up and took out pajamas. My bed was against the wall near a window. The window had bars, of course, and their shadows crossed my bed cover. I changed into the pajamas and put my things in the cabinet. I put Doggy alongside the pillow. I climbed into bed. I lay back against the pillow in a sitting position. I heard the usual night sounds, a cough, a sniffle, and a cry. The blanket was heavy and itchy,
and not necessary. It was hot. I pushed the blanket down toward the bottom of the bed.